Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today, Steve Liggett, has spent his entire career as an artist and champion of art, new art. But more importantly, he's been a conduit to bringing artists together, new artists that break boundaries and shed genres. First as the director of the Old Johnson Atelier in East Tulsa for the Parks and Recreation Department, then as a founding member of the Tulsa Artists Coalition, and now for the past 26 years as the artistic director of Living Arts of Tulsa. And over that 26 years, Living Arts has grown exponentially, starting the New Genre Festival, the Day of the Dead celebration, the 24-hour video race, the Tulsa Art Car Weekend, a poetry slam each year, the OK Electric Festival, and hosting numerous cutting-edge exhibitions, installations, and performances that rarely fail to provoke, inspire, or even confuse a thoughtful viewer. And I think Steve would be the first to agree that's what new art should do. Now, after 26 years at the helm, Steve Liggett is stepping down, and he joins us today to talk about Living Arts' influence on the arts in Tulsa and the community at large. Steve Liggett, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Congratulations on 26 great years at Living Arts.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
When I think back to 1991, when you took over at Living Arts, and where Living Arts is today, you can see a major growth of an organization. But also, I think you've done something more, and Living Arts has done something more in the community, which is build an audience, it's built awareness, it's built perhaps an interest in sort of leading-edge contemporary art. Can you take us back to 1991 and how Tulsa reacted to, say, something out on the edge?
Well, you may remember, because you were definitely a part of that era also, that there was a lot of emphasis going on consumable artwork. Some of the festivals in town had actually made the comment that they were going to make it a $1 million festival. And so I went down and talked to some of the artists, and I said, "Guy, how do you make so many of these things?" And this one person said, "Well, you know, on a good day, I can make 250 of these paintings." And I said, "How in the world can you make that many?" And she said, "Well, I stick them in the oven to get them really hard, and then I can put the next layer on it." And it just hit me after going to New York and seeing Meredith Monk for the first time that this is not what art is about. It's not a commodity. It's a process. And when Virginia Myers, the great composer that led Living Arts for another 20 years before me, and I hope people remember her, is that she really felt like that it was the process of making the art that was the art. And we gathered a bunch of people together at Tucka, and we said, you know, Virginia's died. Should we continue with Living Arts? And it was overwhelming that people said, yeah, because it's the thing, the group, that actually appreciates the process as well as the object of art. So with that in mind, I gathered together the folks that were still board members, and there were only three of them at that point. Virginia had really actually gone more into hospice work and to meditation, and she was having some physical problems in 1990 and then passed in 1991.
Well, and you also mentioned the Tulsa Center for Contemporary Art, which was sort of a predecessor of what Living Arts was now, but it was really ahead of its time, I think.
It was.
And being able, for the community to be able to support it.
And kudos to those folks that really, you know, made a go of it. And Terry Young, who actually gave us a little grant to try to renovate the old building that now is the disco club down.
Majestic, yeah.
Yeah, the Majestic. Anyway, 91 was just like a cauldron of really exciting activity in the art scene in Tulsa with, you know, Mayfest actually doing, you know, things in the Mayo Hotel that were, you know, Carter Hall doing those gigantic robots and people doing performance art in the at galleries. And there, it was like, you know, the late 60s, early 70s all over again. And it was in that time period that I felt like, you know, my calling really, you know, because I had been the president of Tulsa Designer Craftsman. Remember that organization? And then helped form the Tulsa Artist Coalition. And mm-hmm. then I was on the board of Tucka. And
And you were an active artist at that time.
Yeah, very much so. And I was the director at Johnson Atelier, which then, that's another story.
That's the Tulsa Parks Department that it ended up being Waterworks.
Yes.
But Johnson Atelier was on the east side.
That's right. Yeah, we got people to come all the way out to 17th and 123rd East Avenue. And anyway, 91 was a year that I made some big decisions, one of which was to dedicate my life to living arts. And that was, I'd kind of been around already doing different arts organizations. And I felt like, okay, because of the work of Virginia and because of the mission of Living Arts, and really, honestly, because I had that life-changing experience with Meredith Monk at La Mama in New York, I thought, okay, this is where I'm going to put my, you know, foot down and say I'm going to make this work.
You mentioned Meredith Monk. I remember your efforts to finally bring Meredith Monk to Tulsa to do a concert.
Yeah.
Was that a highlight for you?
It was. It was a full circle. You know, Meredith is such a delightful artist, and God, one of my all-time favorite moments is like dancing with her at the old, in the Raw, no, what was it called? What Yokozuna is now, it was called something else before then. Anyway, that was just amazing to bring her here, and she kind of did a greatest hits of Meredith Monk kind of concert, which was fantastic.
So when you took over Living Arts, I think you guys were basically, may not even had a space to begin with, did you? Or did you have a little space?
No, not in 91. Yeah. It wasn't until...
Yeah, a little garage sort of space over on the East Village. I mean, it was maybe a little bigger than a garage, but...
Well, we moved into where the Hunt Club is now.
Yes, right.
And it was the Brick House Gallery.
Yeah.
And John Ridgway had renovated it already, and he had moved in with his girlfriend at the time. And so I asked him if I could live there and restart Living Arts, and he said, sure. Now, that was 92, though. Mm-hmm. 91, it really was, I was still married to Charlotte Ray, and mm-hmm. we had an ongoing studio work, and but in 92, I moved in there and really lived at Living Arts in the back and started everything back up. And at that point, we owed about $3,000, which we had a person that we owed to actually forgive the debt, and then we started at zero, which was great. And I worked really for about 3 years there, not getting any kind of salary, but just getting it going again. And we had some really, that's where New Genre started. That's where mm-hmm. the Poetry Slam started, thanks to Walt Costi mm-hmm. and Ralph Bindel and some of the really pioneers in the arts back then who were already doing significant work. But we kind of, you know, organized it again. And that's where Day of the Dead started again for the Arts Festival with Roberto
right.
Hernandez. Lots of great things came out of that one thing. But then we put the moves on the building, and it backfired on us. And so David Sharp, bless his heart, with all of his understanding of the significance of all of that old buildings downtown, said, well, I got another building that you might like. So we moved into the place where the glassblowing studio is now. Mm-hmm. And that was my second location with Living Arts. And it was doubled the space, and we had great success there, and lots of great programming. We expanded the numbers of committees that we worked with, and then David said, "Well, you know, I've got another building I want you to look at," and then we moved over to Kenosha, and Kenosha was the real giant jump. Then we had never really approached the Andy Warhol Foundation at that point. And they called me up just totally out of the blue and said, hey, you know, we've been looking at all the states that have never written a grant to us. And Oklahoma was one of them. And we talked to people in Oklahoma and said, well, what's going on with the contemporary art? And they said, you got to check out Living Arts. So we would like to come and make a site visit. So I said, yeah, sure. You know, who's going to turn down the Andy Warhol Foundation? And they came and they said, well, have you ever written a grant for us? I said, well, no, we never had figured we'd ever actually be able to do this. And they said, well, this is exactly what we fund. So it was that encouragement in 2004 that really, really made me think, okay, we're going to grow this thing past a grassroots organization. It's going to really be big.
I think that's the whole key of what's happened during your tenure. I mean, it was a group of artists sort of devoted to this for the longest time and really taking away from their own work and their own parts of their lives to sort of sustain this. And all of a sudden, it's just sort of taken off, where it's now sustaining those people instead of the other way around.
Well, I think that the Warhol Foundation especially should be given a tremendous amount of credit.
How did that change your ability to do what you do?
Well, it didn't really. It mm-hmm. just, well, it did financially, because we could then afford to bring in people who, you know, have freight expenses and, you know, they have to travel to install things and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, the practical aspect. It didn't change, though, our mission, which is to present and develop contemporary art in Tulsa. And it's a rare organization nationally that understands that they don't just give grants to the best proposals, that they need to spread out the wealth throughout the entire nation. And, you know, for the last 20 years, I have really looked into who's doing stuff like Living Arts in the middle of the United States, and there aren't that many. Yeah. Even Texas, that has huge amount of money for arts, they don't do this kind of work. Now, Fusebox Festival in Austin, they are doing this kind of work now, and those experimentations, those works that really are what make the great artists eventually come to the top of the heap, you have to give them support. It's the people doing experimental work. And that was what Virginia founded the group on. You know, she went to Eastman School of Music, and every semester they would have a run-through of the compositions that people had made that were experimental, and sometimes they were horrible, she said, but you know, there, and sometimes there'd only be 9 people in the audience listen to it, but they always got a showing, they had a presentation. And that was what Living Arts was founded on, the aspect of these are living artists. These are people that if Look and Life magazine had been key to, like, what was going on in the arts, they would be, you know, with their cameras there and taking photos. But in the arts, that's not necessarily the case.
Now, with this change that happened with the Andy Warhol yeah. Foundation, you were much better able to bring in artists, say, from New Orleans or from New York or mm-hmm. California or the Southwest or all around the country to mm-hmm. show at Living Arts. But I've always sensed that your mission has been twofold. It's to bring those people here, but it's also to nurture local artists as well. Do you think bringing in that outside art as an incubator has been helpful to the art scene?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I was just going to say, during a new genre, mm-hmm. workshops are
yeah,
a big part of
exactly
it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. We always try to get the artists that are doing other kinds of works to be able to present workshops, and some people locally take advantage of that. And it's also important, I think, to show people side by side. You know, so you're showing, you know, Tom or different Tulsa Modern Movement dance group right next to, you know, Bridgman Packer or somebody like that that is already got a name. And that really has been our mission. And the second big thing that happened was we were invited to become part of the National Performance Network, which people in this area of the country don't have the name recognition like the Andy Warhol Foundation, but they are a huge, wonderful nationwide organization that supports organizations like Living Arts doing this kind of work and supporting local people as well as then doing residencies with other people coming in is really what their forte is. And so between the two, the Andy Warhol Foundation with the visual arts and the National Performance Network with the performing arts, we felt like we had a really, really tight and national support group. So when the Kaiser Foundation then said, you know, hey, we're building this new arts district, we'd like for you to anchor the west end of it. And, you know, at first I thought, well, you know, I'm not sure. You know, I don't want to compromise what we're doing, and I want to be careful not to just be dictated by or somebody censor us like I was at Johnson Atelier. And I don't know if I want to do this. And I had a board member come to me, a really smart guy that was renovating that place right on the corner at 3rd and Kenosha. And he said, okay, imagine this, Steve. It's 10 years from now, and you're still over here on Kenosha, and it's all happening on Brady. How are you going to feel? And so I saw it as a chance to be able to have more of an audience for the kinds of experimental work that we were already doing. And I think the team between the George Kaiser Family Foundation and David Sharp was a really match made in heaven for a renaissance to occur in Tulsa. And when we moved over to the new building on Brady, then that really, really was a huge, huge jump in our audience and our appreciation and our budget also.
My guest today is Steve Liggett, the Executive Director of Living Arts of Tulsa. As head of Living Arts of Tulsa, he's served for 26 years, but he's stepping down this summer to pursue other projects, I'm sure. But he's our guest today to talk about how Living Arts has influenced the art scene here in Tulsa and how Tulsa's influenced Living Arts. And part of that is this whole idea of the Brady Arts District. How has the audience changed? I mean, can you contrast, say, a 1990s era event at Living Arts or early 2000 event at Living Arts to today?
The biggest change is the numbers. You know, it's location, 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 they say. So the quantity of programming that Living Arts has been able to do has been directly proportionate to the amount of people that have come to it. Our spoken word events have grown dramatically because of Tony B leading it, and also the aspect of people broadening their horizons. You know, I'm excited about that. I think it needs to go a lot further. You know, we still have hundreds of people and thousands of people that go to very conservative art events in Tulsa, and I'd like to see more people actually be curious about new work rather than the pieces they've already seen before, you know. I think that's the next big step for Tulsans to really gain a courage to be able to go to things that they haven't already seen and to grow your mind through the arts with that kind of stimulation that, you know, that was one of the things when I saw Meredith Monk. It was like, I didn't even know the questions to ask, you know, much less the answers. That's growth. That's like burning new synapses in your brain into really thinking about, wow, I never saw this in that way before. And
well, I want to take you back to one of your first big events, and it was one of your first interactions with Virginia Myers. You saw her do a piano recital, right?
Yes, I did. My mentor at that time, and still to the day, I still hear his voice in my brain, is Tom Manhart. And I had transferred from ORU to TU to really learn how to build a salt kiln and to be able to make myself ready for being a production potter. And, you know, Tom said, well, I want you to go and hear Virginia Myers, this composer at Harweldon. And so I thought, well, why in the world would a potter need to go and hear a concert, you know, a piano concert, for goodness sake? And I said, okay, well, I'll do it because I respect this guy. And he said, well, you know, it'll broaden your horizons. That was the phrase he always used. So I went, and she crawled inside of her piano and started playing it from the inside. It was a George Crumb piece for prepared piano. And I could only last like 30 minutes. And I just thought, oh, this woman is demon possessed. I've studied this at ORU, and I know it when I see it. And so I couldn't understand why Tom had told us to go and see it. But I walked out after 30 minutes, couldn't handle it. So I went back to TU the next day and I said, hey, you know, why did you have me do that? And he just laughed and he said, well, you know, you might learn something from that woman. You should hang around with her. So I began to kind of think, okay, well, there's something here he sees that I don't see, but I'll hang out with her a little bit.
And that's what you're talking about, though, when you visit, you know, you view contemporary art that confronts you, that you don't understand.
Yeah, confuses you a little bit, confounds you a little bit, and it's like, oh, my gosh, what was that? That's what we need more. You know, we need more of that I don't think it's only shock. It's just ignorance, really, you know, in the best sense of the word. You know, it's we're not educated about those kinds of things. And that's why Living Arts has the education program for kids in the summer called the New Arts Camp. Those are the artists since 1965 that have really made a difference in the way we think about art if you travel. Yeah. If you don't, or you don't have any kind of educational background, it's tough to go in and see really, really hard-hitting things. They might be entertaining, but those things that really get you and you kind of are mad about or worried about or confused by, those are the things really that you need to stay and spend a little bit more time with.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter if you're very knowledgeable. There'll always be art that, yes, that confronts you in that way. It's, yeah, it's never-ending process.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of it.
One of the things, you've done some amazing work in bringing exhibits to Living Arts, but what are some of the local exhibits and local things that you've done that you are most proud of in your tenure?
Well, the New Genre Festival. Is that what you mean, the big programs?
Yeah, or even just an exhibit.
Okay.
But New Genre, let's talk
about New Genre. New Genre has been going on since for 24 years now. And I'm really proud of it because it brings in the most stimulating artists of our, mainly the United States. We have had some from Europe, but mainly United States. And it is the kind of thing that if people don't go to, then they hear about afterwards and they say, oh my gosh, I wish I had gone to that. It's always the first weekend in March, and it's always interesting. And really, we had a woman this year, that Judy Dunaway, that played balloons as an instrument, yeah, for her concert. And it was like that, like we were just talking about. You know, some people, wow, that was like so weird, and they just couldn't handle it. But she was an absolute amazing musician. We have had some really amazing musicians over the years. Phil Niblock, who is in the Northeast, is an electronic musician, which has then informed things that we did, like the OK Electric Music Festival that we have coming up the end of April. And Noam Feingold has taken that on as his curation, and he's doing a fantastic job. So that's one. The Day of the Dead Arts Festival has been a real giant success for me personally, because in seeing what was going on in Oaxaca, Mexico, and seeing the way other cultures dealt with death, which we all are going to be there, right? And how do we deal with the aspect of somebody dying? You know, I mean, how do we remember them? How do we just put them in the grave and put some flowers on it and walk away? Now, these people remember people, and they remember different aspects, and they continuously remember them so that they keep their spirit alive. So that's evolved from a very elitist thing that I was doing back in the 90s, where I had only artists building altars, to allowing anyone who wants to
build basically a street festival, as it is in many parts of the world.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. And we've fashioned it. And the continuation of of really reaching into the community and true engagement with the community rather than just having like a little workshop, whatever, with the community is really, I think, the key to our success. Is I realized that when a community organization, whatever it be, like, let's say the Dreamers Act of Oklahoma, where their mission crosses our mission, which is contemporary art, that's the sweet spot. That's where the community and the contemporary arts organizations have a win-win scenario. And so where you have homelessness and where you have contemporary art and where they overlap, that's where you have a huge impact of how can we help you get your ideas across without compromising our mission.
Now, what are your hopes for Living Arts after you step down? What do you hope, what's happening ten years down the road?
When I took over from Virginia, it changed. I mean, she was a musician. I was a visual artist. I anticipate it changing again. But I anticipate, because of some of the really great groundwork that we've laid for Living Arts with bylaws and policies and all this really boring stuff that actually you have to have in order to keep going, that we will just evolve. You know, I see it changing, but I see it also evolving way past where it is today, and I don't know how, because it's living. And it's an organism. And when you change a part of the organism, then it's going to react to the new part. And we don't know who that new part is. But we have, at this point, narrowed it down to 4 applicants. And so we'll be making a decision in the next month. And then the end of June, we will have a big party celebrating the new person coming in and my leaving. So I think it'll be a smooth transition. I don't see any riots or rebellious activity going on. I hope maybe a little bit, though, you know.
Well, Steve, we appreciate all your work for Living Arts and for the city of Tulsa and the art scene here. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Steve Liggett is the Artistic Director of Living Arts of Tulsa. He'll be stepping down after 26 years at the helm in June. But he'll continue to provoke viewers through the last few months with an exhibit, Crossing Borders, a cross-genre examination of immigration in May, and Examining Change, a North Tulsa art project comparing the area from the early 1990s to today. You can learn more about all of Living Arts' activities at livingarts.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.